actually do the real, you know, environmental work. Their morale is low, but it's also motivated that the dedication they have to what they do, because they're working under extreme circumstances right now. There's an uncertainty about what's going to happen to our agency and about what we'll be able to do. But despite those things, the EPA employees are just dedicated to the mission, and they're performing as best as they can. And I'm hopeful that America will get involved and reach out to their representatives and insist that these funds not be cut and that the staff is not cut.
Okay. Well, Mr. James, thank you so much for your time. And we will be thinking about you and your coworkers at the EPA.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Nate James from the US EPA talking with us about EPA budget cuts.
Girl, KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at Tonic Lounge in Portland. Next Level 3.0 is a collaboration with Flawless Shade, the House of Flora, and the House of Ada, featuring KBOO's Dina B and DJ Gila River Monster, and more DJs and performers. Costumes are highly recommended. Again, that's Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at the Tonic Lounge, 3100 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
The time is 6:01, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Cutie Pock Talk.
Thank you. The remix god!
Hi everyone, welcome to Cutie Pock Talk, where we invite you to sit down and listen to what's happening here to in Portland's queer and trans community. In Portland! I'm Darian Jones, here with
Zella Zelos.
And two of our guests today.
Layla Hale.
And Maya Vivas.
Thank you for joining us today. So just to let our audience know, today's episode is going to primarily serve as a resource for bridging community here and leveraging additional resources for our community in Portland and the art community. And so we want to kind of focus this month in June on art and kind of pride and the different ways you can engage here in the community in Portland and in summer, and just to let folks know what's really happening for the art field in kind of like literary and actual visual arts. So today we have Layla and Maya here from Ori Gallery, and I don't know if you all know about Ori Gallery, but it's a local. Tell us about it. Let's. Who wants to start? Like, I'll let you talk about your baby in a sense. Like,
never talk about my baby. I feel like you've got the spiel down now.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel like opening a gallery is a dream of mine that I've had for a very long time, and it's really just a direct response to my frustrations of like not seeing myself reflected in institutional art spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So our hopes for Ori Gallery is to reclaim and redefine the white cube through amplifying the voices of trans and queer artists of color, community organizing, and mobilization through the arts.
Wow.
Mission statement.
That's
all. No big deal.
Casual.
That sounds pretty powerful. So I'm kind of curious as to what were some of the things that directly responded, that you're trying to directly respond to with this gallery in Portland?
Well, folks pretty much know at this point the racist institutional history of Portland, Oregon, and how the Mississippi District used to be a redlining district, which is one of the only places in town that black and brown folks could live, own businesses, congregate, et cetera, et cetera. So opening up a Cutie Pock focused gallery on Mississippi is sort of reclaiming, not only reclaiming what a gallery space is, but reclaiming that like physical area. And we're actually just down the street from where Kendra James was murdered. So we want to be able to like truly institutionalize and like dig in into that neighborhood and lift up those voices that have been there. We're also really close to SEI and a bunch of other black and brown institutions that we plan on congregating with and organizing with. So
yeah,
it's exciting.
It is exciting.
That sounds like establishing kind of like a foundation for people to really like build on for a community space and a community center. Yeah. Is there some kind of, is there a focus of the type of maybe art that you want to like have? Like, is it kind of like the mediums that you want to represent, or is it a spectrum, or what does that look like? Is it, you know, poetry or like live audio, visuals, sculptures?
Yeah.
Like, I'm so curious.
I don't see ourselves, like, I don't want to limit our gallery to a specific medium. What we're looking more for is narrative, right? So like, I feel like within the art institution at large, via like colonialism and like white supremacy, there is like the white male narrative. It's just repeated over and over and over again.
The
hero.
So we're really looking for narrative above anything else. Yeah.
No, and that's beautiful. That's powerful. I think narrative can take so many forms, and
large part of like what we're trying to accomplish for a month. Take, you know, 55% of your commission and like say ta-da. Like, we're building a larger movement than that.
Right.
That's awesome. What other components are going to be different for an artist going into Ori Gallery than the traditional gallery?
Oh my god, I have so many thoughts.
Okay. Just go. We got time.
Okay, cool. So I feel like I've just been frustrated like walking into galleries, and it's like you're used to like the white cube, right? The white walls and like the clean space. And yes, that for so long that has been like the standard narrative, and that is like what a gallery looks like. And as an artist, you come in there and you fit into a gallery setting. Not so much it's not so much the art of the gallery that molds to the artist in order to propel a narrative, but an artist is walking into a space and expected to fit the form of the gallery. And I am looking to flip that completely on its head. Like, if an artist comes in and wants blue walls and purple pedestals, and that is part of the work and that is how they want to propel their narrative, I am all for that. I am all for just being a blank canvas, the entire space to being a blank canvas for the artist.
Wow. Yeah. So a living gallery. Beautiful. It's going to be a living gallery.
Ooh.
I like that we
you
can,
yeah. Go ahead. Go right ahead. Which I think is what a gallery should be about, you know, speaking of narrative. You know, that's something that evolves. It never dies. It never. Yeah. So that's really awesome. So an artist can come into Aura Gallery and say, I need purple walls, and, you know, I'm going to be doing, you know, some version of like West African dance, but also incorporating painting. And Aura Gallery is going to be like, yes, you can do that.
Basically, yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, we want to facilitate artists in any way we can.
That's basically really fantastic. Is there a support system that you have for that, for artists who I'm sure have never experienced that before? I mean, I could speak as a POC with those times where you do get the green light. Like, it took a lot of evolutions to say, yeah, I'm worth it. I can do whatever I want, and it's valid, and my art's valid, and what I'm doing is valid. But there was many times where I was like, what? You mean and those are still happening. So what does Aura Gallery do? And I mean, have you encountered that? Or
I mean, I feel like it's about a conversation with the individual artist or activist or organizer that we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not any sort of like, we have A, B, and C set up, because we don't know what people's needs are until they appear.
Right, sure.
So it's about having a conversation and being limber like that, which is the really great thing about working in a team of two people, is that we can make those split second decisions that we know are right for the work that we're doing without having to be accountable to other people who aren't deeply involved in it.
Like, that's cool.
Small team.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. That's true. Have so, you?
Oh. Go ahead. Go ahead, Darren. Go ahead.
No, it's just, this is just kind of like making
we're just
me
excited.
No, I think it's awesome. This is an exciting thing. Like, so many thoughts I've got. Uh-huh. The first one is that, do you know the LGBTQ alphabet? The Equinox released like a few weeks ago. It's this video where like cutie pock like dancers are like forming alphabet, because it's like the six letters are never enough, and they like coming out is one of them, and it's so interesting how they're dancing in a wave, because that's kind of how it can be for a lot of the people in our community. But one of the things I was gonna bring up just now with talking about this living space, this living art space, and what was it, a living gallery, did you all attend Spectrum like 2 years ago?
Mm-mm.
I'm sure it's called Spectrum. It was just this like event where like queer and trans folks from the community had like different zones to like display their artwork. Mm-hmm. And I want to say it was at Blow Pony downtown. And
that was the event that I organized.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yes.
I was really enjoying watching Layla's face slowly deepen into recognition. You handled that great.
First,
I wasn't sure if she was like, I hated that art. And then you were like, actually, I made that art.
Excuse my excitement. I was like, I'm pretty sure. Like, this is, it seemed really
fantastic.
Like Cutie Pock Center. And I was like, how did
tell us more about that showing, Dari.
And it was a youth worker who was familiar with the queer and color in Portland.
It was just so beautiful to see like so many different, like it was a spectrum of like folks from our community, and there was like paintings and like paper mache and like drawings, and there was like live poetry and storytelling, and it was so beautiful. And like,
well, it's great to hear that like you like not even like connecting that I was a part of that event, like where it was able to enjoy it and see the like, that was entirely like youth organized.
Yeah.
Like, and they decided the themes, what the advertising looked like, what the marketing looked like, who would go where, how we use the space, if we use that space. We were just, as adults, just crossing the I's and dotting the T's.
Yeah, no, it was a beautiful event. And like, I wish it, more of them would happen. And it sounds like something like that is able to like kind of incubate within our gallery as this living space. And I just think that's such a really cool thing to have in the community. So I'm happy you all are like creating this and like actually like, you know, changing what's the norm, and you're doing it in a place that has like a historical legacy, and I think reclaiming that is really powerful. So
yeah, we're definitely keeping that youth aspect of it. We're going to have young artists participating in shows and in some of the workshops and organizing that happens in Ori Gallery.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so we've got somebody who's just Stacey snuck Trent into the studio
snuck
here.
Snuck into the studio.
Oh my gosh,
we're going to be sharing a mic. We're going to get very friendly here.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. We've been talking about Living Gallery, Ori Gallery, talking about narratives, how they are living in a different spectrum. Do you want to introduce yourself? No? I could do it. Stacey Tran's the most amazing author ever. Her poetry is stupid fantastic, like amazing.
Powerful.
I subscribe to her lunchbox poems and they make me smile every single day. They have a publication coming out, is that right?
Yeah, I have a book coming out in spring of 2018 through Grandma, which is a press based in Seattle. I'm very excited about that and really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Welcome.
Yeah.
Go from here.
Well, I think, you know, with this is the perfect time to segue.
Try not to melt towards... down in front of all these amazing people.
I know. This is a beautiful group. Everyone's this is amazing.
Yeah.
So I think on that one, we're going to kind of break for our first song here today. And I guess I will be introducing the song today, or if anyone else
wants
that's
to. Quite a smile.
No.
I mean, I can introduce the song.
Oh, please feel free, Maya.
All right, fine. I'd like to dedicate this song to a Rin who might be listening.
Rin, I hope you're listening. This is dedicated.
You better be listening.
Oh my god. Enjoy.
of light. Oh, farewell friend, all that I ask is to say goodbye. Below the waning moon, and shed our sticky cheeks. And Neptune played a song as dreams were changing. The moments that were last were never made of tact.
I believe we're back on the air now.
Back on the air now. And Darian is trying to make me talk about zodiacs for like the 10,000th time. And everybody knows no one wants to be my friend because I'm like, forget zodiacs.
Are you a
Gemini?
Freedom
of will. No. See what I mean? Everyone's like, you know what? We can't be friends. We can't go on a date.
Oh, you're a Taurus.
You don't believe in. Shut up. So, you know what? But you knew that. You knew.
Uh-huh. Are zodiacs different than horoscopes?
I think those are kind of the same thing. Layla's face is incredible. I was supposed to do a reintroduction.
Yeah,
and
let's
Darian
do it.
Had
let's
to
do it.
Start something.
My bad. I'm a troublemaker.
You're ornery.
You're ornery. Willful. Willful is the word we've got for that.
Willful. I'm Darian Jones, the willful, ornery troublemaker.
Troublemaker. I'm Zed Zelos Marchant, the really nice host to Kitty Puck, who doesn't believe in astrology. And we have Layla and Maya of Ori Gallery, and we have Stacey Tran, author, poet, person extraordinaire, here in the studio. So now you know, again, who's all here you're confused. Yeah.
About our artist-based episode here for the Kitty Puck.
Yeah, artist-based episode.
But we should probably talk about these people.
Yeah, let's go on. So, Stacey, you just snuck in here. Why don't you talk about yourself some more?
Hey. Well, I think I was coming in here to talk about Tender Table, which is one of my projects in town. It's a storytelling series featuring women of color and gender nonconforming folks of color as well. And I feel like it's asking a lot of Portland. And I was hosting a lot of poetry readings in the past, and I felt like those were really easy for a lot of people to come to, but also retire from, right? Like those are so predictable in a way. What was my reason for continuing to host them? And I guess after a while, I needed something else. And there were a lot of really wonderful people who are, you know, hosting dinners and cooking food for each other and sharing their experiences of not being white in Portland. And I wanted to be a part of that as well. And I feel like that's been a really important project for me this year. Zelos had a chance to present a month ago. That was so amazing.
What? You didn't
tell.
It
seems like only yesterday.
I know.
The secret.
So at Yale Union, this beautiful space in Southeast.
I love that space.
We were in the kitchen, and it was a really important weekend for community here in Portland. And several people came up and mentioned that they felt safe here at this event, and I felt like Zelos and Stephanie Adams Santos and Anna Vo were all instrumental in creating that space.
I bawled my eyes out.
I'm like getting chills talking about it.
I cried like a baby, like on the day I was born. I just felt so safe. I did. It was beautiful. It was the most beautiful thing. And we all were just hugging and telling our stories from all our different walks of life, you know, and then narrating that. Sometimes I brought in poetry, and we're all sharing a dish from our life experience. And I've never felt as safe in my entire life. I didn't want to leave, but they were kicking us out, so eventually I had to go. But that changed my life.
It did.
I think, yeah, that changed my life too. Every time I see, you know, new people coming up to share their story at the series, I don't know. Like, then I don't know what to do with myself after that. I don't know what to do before. I don't know what to do after. I only know what's happening, like, in that moment when I'm hearing these stories and eating the food and you know, being around all these people who care about hearing these stories. So yeah, I feel really grateful to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for for hosting. I think it's incredibly, I'm going to, for sharing a mic, so you might hear us go back and forth, but I think it's incredibly important to have these safe spaces, and by safe spaces, I mean a place where queer and trans people of color can just be and not have to think about extra difficult code switching or extra difficult or painful situations or any of that. And Tender Table was, it just was so freeing. I've done readings before, but it was, well, I think this comes back into like living art, which I feel personally is such a core part of many POCs, histories and lives and narratives, mm-hmm. you know, that our lives are ever evolving. Our stories are present and living. And so it just felt just perfect. Like I couldn't even come up with a word for it then. I was like, is this a reclaiming? What is this? And rarely ever are we allowed to just have interdisciplinary platforms to present our art, which is how we experience life and how those in our families going all the way back have experienced it, which I think is a prime difference between like traditional Western approaches to art, where you have to conform into whatever that, you know, head honcho's idea of art is, which is contrary to A, human nature, you know, and B, is really disrespectful for POC cultures everywhere. You know, Tender Table was gorgeous that I could just do. I did African coffee ceremony in that triple digit heat. I don't know why I chose to do that but I was seeing literally triple, like in shimmers, because it was so hot that day. It was like 103, and I was like, I chose this ceremony for what? But it was awesome to be able to, also just freeing to just be able to present that mm-hmm. as an artist. And you created that space for that I could, you know, make the coffee beans and have the incense going and real time, and in that Anna and Stephanie, you know, that we were just all in the kitchen together, which was just so indicative of like our just growing up and you know, not having to explain oneself through this whole process, not worrying about who's going to take this and run.
Yeah, Stephanie had, like, I think it was like halfway through the event, Stephanie started putting little towelettes, like cold, like she was getting towelettes
it
wet.
It was kind of sexy.
Them in the freezer. And then putting them on people's necks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was really sweet. Like,
she's my fluffer.
Yeah. Oh my God. We were all like taking care of each other in a way, you know, and that felt very genuine. And that feels like breaking through, I don't know, like the fourth wall of, you know, being in public spaces. Here, I think. I've only lived in Oregon, so it's hard for me to know if this is like something that's more common somewhere else. I mean, that's what I hear. That's what I, you know, that's what I grew up with in my Vietnamese family, you know, like all my aunties and all my cousins, like we'd be very close to each other and like sharing a lot of personal space in creating these meals to share with each other and our families. And I catch glimmers of that in the stories that are told at Tender Table, and I think that that's like a very strong nostalgia, strong connection to where I've come from. And yeah, I hope that is something that we keep creating.
That's kind of piquing some questions I've been curious about with Tender Table, and kind of how long has it been kind of going for, and where are the spaces that the events are held, and kind of what does that look like for the community?
The series was started in February of this year, and we launched it with Pamela Santos.
Shout out to Pamela.
Yeah, shout out to Pamela, who's having another archipelago meal, a Filipino meal that they are hosting. Cooking. This is going to be at Broad Space on June 25th at, I think it's 2:00. So look up tickets for that. My good friend Becky Nguyen, whom I'm collaborating with this month for a show in Seattle. And then one of my really great old coworkers, Bonnie Dada, who has worked in the coffee business here for a long time, going back to coffee. Very different approach to coffee, like coffee industry in Portland. But she's also such a fantastic cook, like just got a pasta maker and like made a bunch of pasta and is just like bragging about it on Instagram story. I can't. But you know, we started there. It was at IPRC. And granted, you know, I will say that these events have been hosted at white-owned spaces, which is something that I'm trying to reconcile and, like, hoping to shift significantly. Like,
we know a couple gallery owners that might
But, you know, it's... We've had the... I say we, but, like, you know, it's me and whoever, you know, is presenting at the events. Like, this is a collective. I consider it a collective. We've had the chance to work with Una Gallery, which is also awesome. And I got to see Maya's work there. And Blair and Mercedes are amazing organizers of that space. And, you know, we've been able to work with really beautiful open spaces. Like, we have a... We have an event coming up at the end of July at People's Co-op, which, you know, was instrumental for Mercedes when they were creating their meal for Tender Table. Like, they found a core ingredient in, you know, their recipe that was hard to find anywhere else. And so that's kind of interesting, too, is, like, all these different layers of venues around town that are significant to different people for different reasons. But I would love to work with spaces that are... you know, POC run and organized and owned.
There might be some art organizers somewhere who might know of spaces to use.
I think so.
I don't know where they could be, maybe in this room or not. I don't know. I'm not looking at two right now, maybe.
I mean, in November.
And it's not that they don't exist. I think I will admit, you know, I need to do that outreach. And, you know, Tender Table has pushed me in a good, in a really great way, wonderful way to grow in that and reach out. Having grown up here again, like, it hasn't always been, you know, second nature to be around those spaces that are owned by people of color, because maybe historically, you know, they're not common to come by. You know, like, we're recreating these spaces, I think.
And I think, I don't want
to... Darian and I are psychically entwined dancers.
I know.
I just wanted to tying off of that, Stacey, like, I was amazed by how many people came up to me and Anna and Stephanie afterwards and just say, thank you so much. I didn't know that, like, I thought I knew about my food, or I thought I knew that I had an awesome space. And now that I've actually experienced that, it's changed my whole world. For me, I thought, you know, it changed my world too, because I realized I was not alone, which I think is really, maybe it's just for me personally. Actually, you know, I scratched that. I don't think it's just me personally, because I've had these conversations elsewhere where, you know, especially for those who have lived here for any period of time, there's this normalization of what it is to be queer and trans, and it's whitewashed, and history is whitewashed, the bourgeois is whitewashing everything. And it was, you know, it's difficult as an artist to remember that you do have other people of color that are doing remarkable things, you know, because the narrative is trying to tell you that you're splintered, you're displaced, and that is true. But there are loads of POCs here in Portland, and more coming every day for those who are leaving, that are doing incredible stuff. Case in point, here in this room. And it was just, I think, also validating to have a space and to have more spaces where we can come together and remind ourselves we're not alone. We are not alone. And it might take a little bit, because there's a dominant narrative that is attempting to undermine our thoughts and feelings and our art and everything, and working purposely really hard at it. But we have each other, and we're here, and there's lots of us. So I think if we hold on to that, success is continuing to be ours, you know. But that was really powerful about Tender Table, for sure. Yes, Darian?
Well, no, I'm sorry. Like, just listening to that, I was...
Did you mic drop this?
Yeah, no, you, like, took me back into my own thoughts of when I was going to art school here in Beaverton, and how there was, like, no art in that area, or art that I saw throughout.
I had no idea you went to art school in Beaverton.
Yeah, for like 7 years.
No, that is rough.
Yeah,
it's.
Is there art in Beaverton?
Yeah,
there's art in Beaverton.
It's Arts and Communications Magnet Academy in Beaverton.
You went there?
Yeah, I was
That's
in the
like
sixth
the
grade class.
Ever.
Yeah, it totally was. So I was an original sixth grader, and you know, it's just so I was so lost in these thoughts of how there was never any art that reflected my identity or anything throughout that school. And I don't, it's, you know, the kids, there weren't enough kids who reflected those identities because the artists who were making the art weren't from those communities, and the people showing the art weren't from those communities either. So no one else was shown anything outside of the norm. And I think it's amazing to hear you all creating these spaces for people who don't have access to things like that. Right. And like, you know, trying to raise visibility of that so that folks can find their community. Because, you know, without seeing yourself in something, you don't know if you can do it or like even trying. And so I think it's really powerful to hear like the different ways in like which art can be. And I think you all are doing such like amazing work. So sorry, I was just lost in those thoughts. And
I'd like to assure you the Beavertron is slightly more hip than it was. You know, it's hidden. I live out that way.
Patron.
Yeah. It's 10 years ago, I would have said run. Run!
Get out.
But get out while you can. Get out.
Never look back.
Yeah. But there's like a lot of POCs in there. And there's definitely like, there's these little hidden food pockets is what I call them. And like cultural centers. And I really like living out there, but I'm familiar with that school. My kiddo was like, I want to go there. And I looked up the demographics and I was like, no, you're not going there. It's like, because there's nobody that would represent him at all, you know, and there's no way that I would.
It's a very insulated kind of community. And I don't know if folks saw the news like a week or two ago about the kind of hate crime or the slaying that was thrown in the bathroom about some folks. And
how did I miss that one?
It was just weird because I don't know how I can comment. I mean, I guess I can comment on it.
It was
just like, well, it was like somebody wrote, like a derogatory word for someone that identifies as transgender. And they said this person's name and that they weren't this gender and they didn't belong in the bathroom. And instead of, you know, administration responding to it, it like took days and for it to like blow up on social media and then for like the news to catch on to it, for them to respond and say, oh, we didn't know how to address this issue without calling anyone out. And then I think like even just like the language was really it was a really dominant kind of narrative that was displayed. And it's in the Tron. I'm not trying to hate, but
some student activists who were like involved in that actually the school wouldn't cover it up even.
Yeah,
because they said some BS story about them not having enough janitorial staff to like paint over.
Oh, what?
It. So it just like stayed. Students had to go and like tape up paper to cover it up so that they didn't.
Oh,
have to
I'll be contacting it. Somebody about that.
Well, I know when
it's
I was.
It's been difficult to keep up. I apologize with all the stuff in the news
that's
lately.
That's the stuff I hear through the grapevine because I don't pay attention to like whatever the news pops up because that narrative is always trash.
Right.
Well, I would say the demographics of folks in leadership there don't reflect marginalized communities at all. And the folks who are
right
from,
now.
I'm not sure. I haven't, you know, been back, and I'm not gonna tell people when I left. But
well, definitely, like my friends who are educators, like in that area of town, definitely express a lot of frustration. Even when they do try to advocate for like the youth of color or marginalized youth that are working out there, they're punished actively.
I believe it.
My kid was in an SLC and has been for like most of his life, and I can say that there is a tension. Like at some point, that area is gonna have to recompense and figure itself out because 10 years, 15 years ago. It was a different town, but now it's very, we've got lots of different cultures and demographics there.
I was at the Partners in Diversity event last June when they were having it at the Oregon Historic Children's Museum. And I think it was the mayor of Beaverton who was expressing that, you know, Beaverton's demographics have changed to the majority people of color in the school districts.
It's really that way. It really is. And it's a lot of the educators and the people in power are white. And
that's it.
There is a huge push from those Beavertronians, as I put it, who've been there for like a couple decades, that really will punish the teachers or make it very difficult for them to rise to the occasion for their marginalized kids.
They should hire teachers of color.
yeah, it's kind of where we're at in the Tron, where it's like, you can't ignore this because now we are the majority, you know?
We've taken such a dive down to
this.
We did.
I was going to turn it into something positive, but I kept looking at you like, is it time for an upbeat music break?
I know. I think so. And then I'm like, we're all like, oh, man. So I'm going to hand this one off to Layla to introduce here. Or, oh. Oh, yeah.
It is a song that I like. By
I think
you're playing Holy?
Yeah, it's Holy.
Yeah, it's Holy by Jamila Woods.
Yeah.
It's my jam.
All right, take us away.
And we're floating.
Help me to walk alone ahead. Though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no love. Oh, my smile, my mind reassure me I don't need no one. Woke up this morning with my mind set on loving me. With my mind set on loving me. Woke up this morning with my mind set on loving me. With my mind set on loving me. I'm not lonely, I'm alone, and I'm whole. Days may come, the lover may leave, the winter may not. Hey, the map of your palms, the temple you be, you're all that you got. Hey, the bad days may come, the lover may leave, the winter may not. Hey, the map of your palms, the temple you be, you're all that you got. Though I walk through the darkest valley, I will feel no love. Oh, my smile, my mind reassure me. Woke up this morning with my mind set on loving me. With my mind set on loving me. Woke up this morning with my mind set on loving me. With my mind set on loving me. I'm not lonely, I'm alone, and I'm whole. With my stuff, my cup is full up. What I got is enough. Nobody completes me. Don't mess with my love. Surely, 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 goodness and mercy shall follow.
Throw
me to the femmes is what Layla gave me to say. He was like, yeah,
I like that.
Dive right into femmes. Just dive right in there.
Visual.
Did you say
a
Jew like the sauce?
No, it's very
a Jew like the sauce.
What? We started talking femmes.
Wow, like, that like, that so went somewhere.
Yeah, that escalated quickly.
Mercy.
I'm sorry, I must have been
too sorry. Took a hard left and gained some altitude. Right.
Well, I think you figured me out. I don't believe in astrology, but femme au jus, yes, I believe in that.
Wow. I feel like femme au jus is going to be my new stripper name.
Like that, Darian? Why are you shaming me?
No,
see what I have to deal with?
Am I shaming you? I don't want to shame you. I'm just thinking about when like you did that dive earlier and I was just right. Like, oh, I wish the I were a mermaid. And I would like mermaid around all the time. It's a noun and a verb.
Mermaid.
It is.
Mermaid.
It is.
And a person.
We're going to make our own style guide just for this show.
I could, actually.
You could. Go for it.
And I would draw little mermaid Darians around.
I just can't stop picturing you in like a vinyl merman outfit right now.
I should do that for Ignite this year. And I should be Mer-Darian.
You can knit one.
Mer-Darian. What? Oh my gosh. You have to do this. Right.
Somebody made a joke the other day that, you know how there's like pride, like the winter could be like bear pride, winter cup, like
yes, that's great. Oh
yes, write this down. We can't forget these important things.
We've dropped. Okay, let's okay, go back.
We gotta get back. See, we're a dream team.
So fems.
Okay,
what about fems? What do you want to ask us about fems?
What about them?
What? How do we?
What is fem?
What is fem? How to define fem? Okay, go.
Insert description.
Whatever. Gender's a joke.
It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle.
It is.
Wait, were you wanting to talk about femme in the context of art?
All of it.
All of the above, because I think some of our listeners who might be out there might be unfamiliar with the word femme or like what it means to be femme, and how does that influence art, and what is your take on it as potential femme artists, and what do you think?
Oh man,
I just shortened that to fartus in my head.
Oh my god, stop.
Fartist. I'm a fartist. I craft farts.
I mean, I've been seeing like people taking on the identity of femme, not only as like a descriptor, but also as like a very like political, but also like resistant, like an act of resistance, like and taking on that identity as an act of resistance.
Yeah, I feel like femme is specifically a queer identity.
Yeah,
and one that is more defined by, you know, folks who are clearly affected by misogyny and patriarchy in these very direct ways. And yeah, I feel like it is both like a political and gender identity, which I feel like is a new like intersectional concept a lot of folks aren't really familiar with. Like a lot of folks don't realize that queer is like a sexual, political, and gender identity.
Yeah. Yeah. So useful.
Intersectionality.
Yeah.
So how does that intersect with?
With art?
Yeah. I think it's pretty...
I feel like at the core of everything, I just want to go back to, like, narrative, right? And, I mean, a lot of artists make work that reflect their identities, and a lot of artists make work that reflect their narrative, and through sharing their narrative, they can use that to connect with others and other people. Like you were talking about earlier with Tender Table, like sharing that narrative will lead to connection and not feeling so alone. And then I think, I guess, tying that into femme and like queer identity, that is like not a narrative that is widespread. And so in doing so and spreading that narrative through art, like you can begin to create connection. Yeah.
I
feel like where it goes for me, I instantly think of like how femmes of color specifically are treated in the art world, and and by treated I mean stolen from like, but like, yeah, that was like a real phrase that happened.
You can
and
say
like
that on the radio.
Black women around the world were kind of like, what?
Oh.
Like, oh wait, did I get some trouble?
No, you didn't. No, I just got...
That was a quote.
Darian hit the dump button. Yeah, so I was like, that's my view. You can say Negro. And Negro, yeah, totally.
I did.
Because it's
I
a real...
I got triggered to this weekend.
But that's almost... that's an intersection right there. I had Donald Alexander on the news, who's an amazing African-American filmmaker, talking about... what is it, Nigger Creek Canyon in southern Oregon or something, and then how that name is still there and everybody refers to it as that. And
it's so a Nigger Bend, California.
Right, you know, and we talked about the lore of that name, how it stirs up a lot of feelings, you know, and it's not necessarily a swear word, you know, especially not by FCC, but it pushes buttons. But I feel like that spills into the femme thing for sure, the way like black femmes, you know, and femmes of color are stolen from, and how that's still really current. Exactly. I want to know what Stacey thinks. She's being really quiet over here. I want you to think like you've gotten away with not saying anything else.
And the spotlight's on.
I think I'm really bad with identifying definitions of identity. Like, I struggle with this still, as to like how to describe my identity or how to describe someone's identity. Like I generally describe the work that they're creating, which I think, you know, you did a fantastic job aligning both identity and the work, being a triangulation. You know, I don't know if I
think that's good.
Have anything to, like, I feel like I'm still trying to figure this out.
I'm so relieved. I'm still trying to figure it out. I am.
It's a lot of stuff. These are like deeply complex things.
It is complex. Yeah. I still thought I'm sort of selfish if I wanted to talk about femme, but also like not, because it's relevant. I cannot deny that those who are interpreted as female or who are presenting femme, you know, are just receive a lot of misogyny and trans misogyny and have their work stolen from and are undermined. You know, at the same time, I feel as somebody who's non-binary trans, going through lots of beginning to prepare for certain transitions, that I'm like, what is femme? Exactly. Like, you know, I feel also pulled into this demographic of like POC femme. And I'm like, I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with that. I can't deny it. You know, I am who I am. You know, what does it mean now? I do think it's like a queer descriptor. Exactly, you know, but I also feel like a lot of people don't know what it is, and maybe that's because they're also like, who the heck am I in the first place? So I'm trying to sort that out. So I think it's very vindicating that you're like, I don't really know exactly, but I find that it can be something where maybe for me, I think it breaks down to like an intersection of how one is comfortable expressing themselves and then how the outside world interprets them. And then sometimes I ask myself if I'm upset with the descriptor femme because I'm just angry that I have to be treated a certain way at all because I'm being looked at a certain way, is I think where I'm at in terms of like defining who I am as a non-binary, you know. But and as far as that, how it reflects art, I wish that that wasn't there, so that like the totality of trans lives, the intersections of somebody being non-binary, can be seen even more. I think that's why I'm like, oh, can we have like another word? But then also I don't want another word because then it would just be one more label. But I think for me, being non-binary, I'm like, God, can I just like have long hair, you know, and without it being ascribed to femme, you know? But, so
short answer, no.
Right. I mean,
right? So right, I guess now, that's right? Where I'm at. I'm angry.
Well, I mean...
anger, I feel like anger is a huge part of femme identity in that
Isn't it the thing I'm angry about?
Yeah, it's a thing that feminized folks are often completely denied and shamed for. Like, we know that there's a certain punishment that happens when we traverse the binary and there are, like, cultural burns that we receive because of it. We know that, like, there's a different reaction between when, like, I don't know, what's a white lady name? Drew Barrymore picks up a gun and when like Beyonce picks up a gun, right? When like we ascribe to these things that are not traditionally feminine, there's a cultural burn that happens and that burn looks different dependent on your race, class, social status, documentation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like being angry is such a huge part of being femme because it's about being in a constant abusive relationship with society.
Right.
And like, how do you...
So abrasive.
Like, listen. Like,
well, if you're femme, you're not supposed to be abrasive.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to, like, say anything that might be contrary. You know, like, you're supposed to be agreeable.
And it's so frustrating to have my identity, because I also identify as, like, non-binary femme. But, like, to have so much of my identity based on what other people project onto me. Is like another huge part of the reason why I don't identify as a woman, because I will always be compared to white womanhood and everything that I do or say or speak or eat will be treated as a mutation of that. And if it's something about me that needs to be fixed.
It sounds like folks kind of ascribe femme to being closer to these feminine qualities and not actually what it means. And I think that, you know, I think Zealous, when you were talking, that kind of brings me back to the fact that, you know, identity, kind of like art, can be a journey. And it's, I don't think it's a fixed thing at one point, because I think we're always maybe changing and growing in a different way and how we understand ourselves. Cause, you know, I always talk about myself. myself. I like was thinking last night, when I was younger, I wouldn't dance. I took a dance class for like a week and I was just like, I don't want people to think I'm gay. And like, it was funny because I came out when I was 13, but like I didn't want to dance because I felt like it was too feminine. And even though I love to do it. And so as I've grown up and gotten more comfortable with myself and my identity and being like, what if I do want to take some dance class and actually do it, and how it's, you know, it's not something that I didn't want to do, but the way I understood my identity and how I wanted to, you know, walk in the world and have to like be burdened by the world and how it's going to project onto me, kind of like folks who identify as femme do with these feminine qualities. It's a weird kind of conversation, and it's interesting that we're diving so deeply into the journeys that we're all on. And
told you we're going to dive right into femme.
That's a really good example of how like toxic masculinity hurts men too. I apologize.
That's one good one. Kyle's got it.
We're good. We're good.
Thanks, Kyle.
So, but like, here you are trying to move through the world and live your truth and just be who you are as you are, and you're facing all of these punishments and reprisals for, you know, attempting something that's too feminine, both as like a masculine human and a black masculine human. There's like multi-folds of punishments that happen for that. And we don't like it. We want to change it. So support our gallery.
Yes. Well, that's why we need all this multidisciplinary art, because there's no way that you can tell these stories though through one lens or just from a perspective of, okay, we'll tell your story, but like in this specific way. Yeah. Here's some white walls, get to it. It's like,
yeah. And like such a huge part of that is making sure that we're not making people tailor their story for the white gaze.
Yeah.
Like,
amen to that.
Because I feel like that's where so much of our stories die. They just like, they get watered down and like it's shea moisture all over again.
Yeah.
And,
like, oh my God.
And we lose that FUBU aspect. And like, and we're definitely like, though we're bringing all of this like super heady, like deep complex movement building work that is like incorporating art into it, there's also, we still want to keep one stiletto in the streets and like remember who we are and what we came from, and that's keeping it FUBU and like maintaining that integrity and making the decisions that we know are right for our communities because we've been making them this whole time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's something that I want to make sure that we don't lose. Like, yes, we are becoming an institution of sorts, but hopefully, like, well, I know that like at our core, like it's kind of like anti-establishment but an establishment, you know, but we get to choose how we organize ourselves and what values we're going to uphold and who we invite into the space and who is represented in the space. And I think that is important, and that's something that I want to continue. I know we mentioned something about art as resistance earlier, and I feel like one of the questions that you had for us is like, how are artists using art in order to resist? And I feel like that's just like been happening for ever, right? I mean, whether it was like singing in the cotton fields to like making a sphinx out of sugar, like it's still happening. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I feel like
you can't have the resistance without art.
Exactly.
Artists are the first people who are silenced under a fascist regime. And we already see these things happening because art is the most powerful tool we have against dominant hegemony. Like, it is the fastest way to convey these very complex concepts to massive amounts of people at once. And it is a way to emotionally ignite folks into action. We cannot have resistance without art.
Without art, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, like, holding gosh darn artists accountable
gosh
for
darn
the work that
artists.
They create, because the white art world becomes this, like, people think it's this weird vortex where we can't be racist because it's art. And like, whoever that white woman was with those paintings of Emmett Till, this white woman making money off of paintings of freaking Emmett Till, are you kidding me? And no one is holding anyone responsible because, ooh, it's art. Like, no. Mm-hmm. Like, freedom of speech is not freedom from responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like, you have total and full responsibility for the things that come out of your mouth or that you create or take photographs of, whatever, whatever. Like, and I, for one, am just like sick of like the innate violence in that. Like, I'm done with it.
Well, it's, and it's, like, I'm with you on violence that one. With an allyship, right? Where folks can check out and be like, oh my gosh, I've done my ally thing this week. I showed up to a protest and it was not a march.
And, oh my God. You know, it just freaking resonated for an ally. A so-called ally of mine, where I was like, oh, that would be cool. But then I just realized it was just all this person does is just go to protest all the time, but I'm never feeling supported or like the narrative. I feel like on the everyday basis, that just wasn't happening. And I was like, okay, I see what's going on here. Check. You just want to show up for the specific empty promises, but you don't actually want to be responsible for following through with that.
We don't teach accountability or like what actual like accomplishship looks like. Mm-hmm. Like we're taught to like, oh, it's Cinco de Mayo. Everybody put on a paper sombrero and we'll like eat nachos in our fifth grade talent show or whatever. And it has nothing to do.
You don't think their conscience is like, I'm pretty sure their conscience is like, I feel really guilty doing this.
I mean, not to, do it anyway. To put this back, but I mean, when you look at our institutions still, like, have you seen the art in the Capitol building?
Listen.
Like, yeah. Legit destruction of a society.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. This is a dark note to kind of...
Well, you know, I don't think it's like a... Yeah, I guess you could say it's dark, but also like it's that real. Goes back to like the anger that we were talking about with femme intersections and art and being femme and what that means and all these things. Because how in the world could we not make this art without any of that? Because it's our history. And I often feel like that's part... of the has been part of the issue is like in traditional Western spaces we don't get to have that say or just in our everyday lives and our, you know, that's not something that is safe to do a lot of the time. So realizing that, you know, there's no way we can have our stories without it getting a little umber.
Well, I think it's the anger too comes from just the fact of wanting to be honest about it. And because the story that